Good morning to our staff. We would like to start shortly with our meeting. I had requested that all of the members log in much earlier, maybe 5 minutes to log in, just to make sure that I make some announcements regarding one that we have a busy week this week, starting from Tuesday, when we have to convene after today's meeting with the minister. But just today, indicating that we have a long day, longer than we anticipated, because we will be having a meeting after the minister with the Office of the Health Standard Compliance and the ombudsperson. Now, Honorable Van Staten, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning. I just wanted to see you this morning, but nevertheless, if a meeting goes beyond 1 o'clock, can I be please excused at 1:15 due to other activities? Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Member, we take those formal apologies when we start the meeting. Right now, I start to appraise you on those issues. Say, we would have to, I wanted just to raise some of these issues. That one, the meeting may be longer today. After the minister, we still have to get this input from the Office of the Health Standard Compliance. Yet, maybe by that time, the Honorable Van Staten might be gone. I wanted to request you, Honorable Minister, though I will touch on the AG's report. I already have sent in a letter yesterday to the minister so that we would deal with the issue of the minister's budget vote and tag that we have a rider to still have a separate meeting to deal with the issues that emanate. Was this is an annual performance plan, and we will have to deal with the report and the performance report inclusive of what the AG gave us. So that one is a separate matter. I had a meeting with the chief whip of the majority party yesterday, who was saying, look, we will have a long constituency break from the 4th of June right until August, expected to assist and work with our political parties. But she's also receiving requests for portfolio committees to do some work during those times, and she is amenable to that. But a guide will that we should not use more than 2 days per week for those activities, so that we do not get a blame from political parties that were unavailable. So I wanted to raise that, Honorable Members, because we will be making a request to you beyond when we start with the 4th of June break. May I also indicate to you that they have approved that while the budget votes are continuing, we will be able to go and do our oversight in region, in provinces, together with getting those NHI processes listening. By the end of this week, we will be sending invitations to the first batch of those who must come and present to us. All meetings, Honorable Members, will be done virtually so that you can still be able to respond. I wanted to raise those issues. There may be clarity-seeking questions towards the end, but as it is now 10 o'clock and we are probably joined by all of us, some of the things that I'm raising now were announcements that we may seek clarity on. Maybe we'll allow that towards the end of when we have digested and you said, look, this we still want clarity on. But also after you are going to hear my inputs in addressing the ministry on the issues of the AG's report yesterday. So let me hold it at that for now with those announcements, and therefore say we will then now want to welcome the Department of Health. I did receive an information late last night that the delegation will be led by the Deputy Minister. I suppose Honorable Wilson might actually understand there was an incident in Limpopo, and the minister apparently is still attending and getting to be supporting that province with things that happened there. So he is unable to log in, and the delegation is led by the deputy minister, and the DG will be around because they are presenting to us an annual performance plan. Of course, we will be able to raise certain issues there. Can I then now request Ms. Majalamba to indicate the presence of honorable members in this meeting? I'm not going to take another hand, Honorable Van Staten. We'll get that into a formal meeting. Can you not delay until I get Ms. Majalamba to inform us who are in the meetings, and apologies.
Morning and thank you, Chair. Present is Dr. Domo, Mr. Munyai, Ms. Gela, Mr. Sokacha, Dr. Jacobs, Dr. Harvard, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Ms. Chero, and Mr. Van Staden. I've received an apology from Ms. Sukers. She's still with the basic education oversight. And Mr. Imam Sheikh won't be able to attend due to prior engagement. Thank you, Chair.
Are we there? It's quiet.
I'm here, but I can't hear anybody else.
Hi, good morning. I'm here.
Miss Majalamba has already introduced you all to be present. I am now saying I'm requesting the Deputy Minister to introduce those who are supporting him. I did indicate the challenges that are facing the minister in Limpopo province. And then before, Deputy Minister, you start the presentation, I will have some remarks to make to you and to your delegation, then we can proceed. Deputy Minister?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you for this opportunity. At this stage, I, as you have mentioned, I'm accompanied by the delegation led by the Director General, Dr. Buthelezi. So I'll ask the DG to just indicate the delegation from the department, and then we'll get back, we'll hand over back to you, Honorable Chair. DG, just give the high-level introduction of the departmental delegation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. Good morning. With us, accompanying the Deputy Minister is myself. Then I've got DDGs, the CFO, Mr. Ian van der Merwe, Acting DDG, Dr. Makanya, Acting DDG, Anneli Swakele. Then we have the Chief Director from Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, Ms. Thulile Zondi, who will lead us with the presentation of the APP today. And then we have the Chief of Staff, Mr. Macheza. We've got Ms. Ngubo, who's the head of the Office of the DG. And then we also have our parliamentary liaison officer with us. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I will hand back. Thank you.
Deputy Minister, thank you very much, and to the Director General. May I indicate that you are at the tail end of presentations following the presentation that have been made by various entities that work and report to you, and there have been certain things that were raised by the Financial and Fiscal Commission, some of them positive and others real challenges facing certain entities and the department. We may bring that up just before. I haven't really been able to look at that now, but we will raise those out. Some of the members here know about those issues. and then you will have to help us to respond to some of those matters. Number two, yesterday we got a very disturbing report from the Auditor General, which we would really want to put a rider that maybe members may or may not have to refer to it, but since then, resolved as a committee that yesterday I write to the minister. I wrote and even spoke to the minister yesterday that we would like to have a meeting where we envisage a situation where the Auditor General will come and present. We ask clarity seeking questions. If we have not exhausted them from our meeting yesterday, then we ask them to leave. In that meeting, there will be a Minister of Health, Deputy Minister of Health, the Director General and all the DDGs. There will be MECs of all 9 provinces and HODs of all 9 provinces. It's a very concerning report, and which, as we go forward, probably may not change your annual performance plan, but it's a post-mortem that we need to do and understand how did things come to be where they are. They were presenting a report of the procurement and the storage, largely of the PPEs in various provinces, showing us pictures of areas that actually were very concerning and other things that are there. So that meeting we have requested specifically as mandated by the Portfolio Committee to take place within 14 days. Other members were saying 7 days. I requested that 7 days may just be too short because we still have to get all these leaders all over the country. Number two, the minister himself is and the department is preparing for the budget vote on Thursday. So we would want to really be very focused when we have this meeting. So that is one thing that I needed to raise in this meeting, Minister. So we may, Deputy Minister, so we may not really go too much on this AG's report now. I have also been thinking that we probably have to, and other members suggested, why don't we have a joint meeting with the NCOP Select Committee on this, that we are considering maybe to assist us. The rest of the other issues we will probably take along. I will still have to go through and check what was the Fiscal Financial Commission saying about you and the entities. That maybe we can really deal with it. But the AG's report, I would prefer that they were just not looking into the whole spectrum. They were focusing on their work in provinces and national on the procurement, distribution, the use of the PPE and storage. That is a very, very concerning. Some members were even going to say the damning report. So I would wish that we don't really dwell too much into that until we find time and space to do that. As you start your presentation, Minister, Deputy Minister, we will have to understand, maybe as government, you had no choice but to accept this type of a budget and these budget cuts. But for us, it strengthens our resolve as a portfolio committee that we need separately to meet with the Minister of Finance. But the members here will probably talk to that because that part we've already requested is a matter of when is that taking place, because it's just something we need to understand. Maybe some of our minds are not at the level of clear understanding how you deal with this situation in this way. So that would probably some of the things that I would expect the members to continue to endorse, because at that time, it might not have been clearer. It might have been, we want to see the Minister of Finance because we're not sure whether we are not being shortchanged on the allocation for vaccines. But now, it looks like the problem is bigger and wider than that when you look into your budget plan on the APP. Let me then say, you are free to comment on those towards the end, but now maybe let's allow the DG or whoever has been mandated by the DG to start the presentation. Please try and squeeze it within 45 minutes if you can, so that we can allow more debate and time for members to ask questions, and then you come back again to clarify us on the questions asked. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you. Accept this opportunity to and greetings first to yourself and to all the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. As the Ministry of Health and the Department, we value this opportunity to come and present to the Portfolio Committee. our annual performance plans and budgets. And as you have said, under very difficult circumstances, we know that even before the COVID-19 pandemic descended on us early last year, already the country was going through some difficult economic circumstances with declining revenue. But I'm sure this will be properly discussed at the kind of meeting which the chair has alluded to. We are presenting this annual performance plan for the financial year 2021-2022 under still very difficult conditions, where we've now gone through a full cycle of full year of the COVID-19 pandemic, with the 2020-21 year has having been largely consumed by our management of this pandemic. As we are now, we can't even say that we are out of the woods, as we all know. We've gone through two waves, middle of last year, and then at the end of the year, second wave, which went up to early this year with much more devastation, more transmissibility, more casual, more fatalities than the previous first wave. We are now at the level of a plateau, even at this stage, the worrying signs of increasing positivity rates, increasing numbers. For the first time over the last few days, our 24-hour positive numbers have now gone beyond 2,000 after a long period when we were just hovering under 1,000 and just over 1,000. So that's an indication that we may be getting into some difficulty again. The good thing at the present moment is that as this, while this threat is looming, but we also different from last year, where we could only depend on non-pharmaceutical interventions, we now have vaccines which have been proven to be safe and effective, a few of them, and we also have started to administer these vaccines. We know that we started slowly after the disappointment with our initial consignment of the AstraZeneca, which was found to be not effective against the dominant variant. But we were able to start with J&J trial vaccine. And where we are now, we are busy completing the healthcare workers, and also having recently received, on the 5th of May, having received the first consignment of the Pfizer vaccines, 325,000 of those, and expecting just over 1 million of the Johnson & Johnson vaccines again to be delivered in the next few days. So at least as we roll out the vaccines, we are hoping that we will not only depending on the non-pharmaceutical interventions, which remain key, but we also have these vaccines as part of our armament. We hope to vaccinate at least 67% of the population, but we are actually planning for more, to cover more of the population. So minimum 40 million, but we're planning to do more than that. With the vaccination program, we're hoping that we will now be able to reduce the infections, but also even if people do get infected, that the severity will be less, and also less fatalities and less hospital admissions, less in our ICUs. That's what we're going to be ramping up over the next few days and weeks. This will give us time to can restore our health services. As we know, we lost a lot of ground in terms of basic health services, such as sexual and reproductive health, such as the prevention and management of HIV and AIDS, our 1990-90 targets, the rollout of antiretroviral treatment was hampered, detection and treatment of tuberculosis, and many other, and also non-communicable diseases. Just in terms of diverting more of our resources to laying out field hospitals, expanding testing and treatment for the COVID-19. All this did affect the implementation of our plans over the last financial year. And we hope that with the rollout of the vaccination program, we will be able to get back to focus on the core programs, including the implementation of universal health coverage, supported hopefully by the passing of the NHI bill, but on our side, laying the foundation and the framework for future implementation, but at the same time, improving the capacity and quality of our health services. As you would see from the presentation, we are presenting to you for this financial year 2021-2022. We'll be presenting a budget of just over 62.5 billion rand. And of course, we must also indicate that in terms of almost all our programs have been affected by budget reductions. Where there's been some improvement is largely in terms of the management of COVID-19. Honorable Chair, without going into a lot of details so that we manage the time, as you have indicated, I'll then hand over to the DG to indicate the relevant officials who will be able to present to you the full APP of the department. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. I would like to request that Ms. Thuli Lezondi, who is responsible for planning, monitoring and evaluation, to lead us through the presentation, and then she will hand over the last part to the CFO on the financial aspect. Ms. Lezondi.
Thank you, DG. Good morning to the Honourable Chair, Dr. Ndlovu, and the Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, and the officials in the meeting. So, I just want to make sure that the presentation is visible. If it's visible, I'm going to proceed and say that the presentation outline is that I will cover a bit of the background and introduction, and also reference our strategic plan and go straight into the annual performance plan, in which I'll cover the performance information and the CFO cover the financial information, as DG has said. So in terms of the required alignment with our long-term plans, we've got the MTSF 2019 to 24 and the Presidential Health Compact. So the first aspect will be the MTSF 2019-2024 Survive and Thrive long-term goal, which is to improve the life expectancy of South Africans to 66.6 years by 2024 and 70 years by 2030. And this is aligned with our strategic plan in which we talk about the goal one of improving life expectancy and prevention of diseases. And then I will then move to second aspect, which talks to the second long-term goal, which is the universal health coverage for all South Africans, progressively achieved, and all citizens protected from catastrophic financial impact while seeking health care by 2030 through the implementation of the NHI policy. And in particular, there are two goals related to that, where we talk about the achievement of UHC by implementing the NHI policy and quality improvement in the provision of healthcare. And also you will note that these then align to the Presidential Health Compact, in which the focus is the health system strengthening. So we have got Pillar 4 and Pillar 6 with regards to NHI. And then for quality, we've got Pillar 5 and Pillar 7. And also we have got the aspects of the strategic plan, which talks to the community engagement and reorientating the system to primary health care through community-based health programs, which is aligned to Pillar 8 of the compact. And we also address the issues of equity training and enhancing human resources for health, which is aligned to Pillar 1. And then the other one will be talking to availability of medical products and equipment, which is aligned to Pillar 2 and Pillar 6. And then the next one will talk to the robust and effective information system to automate business processes and improve evidence-based decision-making, which is aligned to Pillar 9 of the compact. The last one, which is goal 4, talks to building infrastructure for effective service delivery, which is also in the strategic plan and aligned to Pillar 3 of the presidential compact. So in terms of the diagnostic document that we have on the table, we're talking about the compact, but also the other documents such as the ethical and accountable quality healthcare in South Africa, the health market inquiries, as well as the South African demographic and health survey that was done in 2019. Then referencing our strategic plan 2020-2024-2025. So what is key about it is the fact that, I mean, it brings the MTSS priority 3, which talks to health, education, skills, and health. And then with that, we have got the impact statement, which talks to life expectancy and the universal health coverage. And the important thing about the outcomes of our strategic plan is that we use them in developing our APP. And so in different programs, I'll be referring to these 18 outcomes. And also to say that the only new outcome has to do with COVID-19, but otherwise the others are directly embedded in our long-term plan. So moving into the APP itself for this 21-22 financial year, we start with program one. There are six programs in total. So program one supports services to the National Department of Health, including HR, labor relations, information and technology, property management, security, legal, supply chain, and financial management services. So in program one, the first outcome talks to the financial management strengthening in the health sector, in which we are expected to achieve the good audit outcomes. And for 2020 year as our baseline, we had achieved unqualified audit opinion. And in the upcoming 3 years, we are planning to maintain that good status. And then the second outcome talks to the management of medical legal cases in the health care system, in which we had started in 2020 with the policy and legal framework drafting and amendment of the State Liability Act. And so we, for 2021, that policy legal framework needs to be gazetted. And moving forward, that will need to manage, help us manage the medical legal claims and also be implemented and monitored in the coming year. The third outcome talks to contingency liabilities reduced under to under 60% of the backlog in the value. This is referring again to the medical legal claim, in which for the 2020-21 financial year, we developed a case management system, and it was implemented in three provinces. And for the current year, we want to make sure that all the provinces are covered. And then the next one talked to premature mortality due to NCDs reduced to 26%. And for this one, we will be ensuring that we have both health promotion messages being broadcasted in social media. And I must say that this is also part of a portion of the NCD interventions is covered on the on program three. So this is one aspect of it. And then moving to program two, the program two is about the national health insurance, which aims to improve quality of health services and also to achieve the universal health coverage and health financing reform. So for this one, in 2020, the first outcome or the main outcome is the package of services available to the population extended on the basis of cost effectiveness and equity. Under this outcome was got four outputs, which the first one is the NHI bill. So the work of the portfolio committee hearing on the NHI bill started in 2020-21, and which Department of Health participated. And in 2021, we will also be part of those hearings. And then the second output has got the medical aid beneficiaries registered on the HPRS. So the first, over the years, we've been registering the general population onto the HPRS. So this is the component that needs to be added for this financial year. And then the next output is the one on the technical working group appointed to draft service benefit framework for primary health care. And to say that for 2020, the technical working group was appointed to draft the service benefit framework, and for 2021, then this will be finalized, and in the upcoming year, the framework will look at specific areas such as regional and specialized hospitals, as well as in 2023, looking at the district central and tertiary hospitals. And then the next output talks to the patients registered through the Central Chronic Medicine Dispensing and Distribution Program to say that this is one of the programs that seems to have assisted us even during COVID, where the patients were able to collect medication better, particularly during the lockdown than in the facilities. So for the current financial year, the performance was at 4 million, and we intend to increase it by 500,000 every year for the next year. Then the next outcome talks to the resources available for managers and frontline service providers with flexibility to manage it according to local needs. So for this outcome, we have got the health facilities reporting stock availability for their medication at the National Surveillance Center. So for 2020, we had 3,788, and it will be increased incrementally in the next 3 years to achieve the full coverage. Then moving on to program three, which is communicable and non-communicable diseases. So we then would have this program covering the communicable and non-communicable diseases particularly focusing on the national policies, guidelines, norms and standards, and ensuring that we reduce mobility and mortality associated with the communicable and non-communicable diseases, and ensuring that we also reduce maternal and child mortality.
So the first outcome here is to do with mobility and mortality reduced related to COVID-19, in which the number of people to be vaccinated, as the MS said, is 40 million. And then the next one talks to quality and safety of care being improved. And so the output is the hospitals that obtain 75% and above on food service quality assessment two. And for this financial year, we are targeting about 78 hospitals, and we will be increasing to 196, then to 296 for the financial years 2022 and 2023. And then the third outcome is the HIV incidence amongst youth reduced, where the intervention is to actually create the youth zones at primary health care. For 2021, we are aiming for 1,600, which doubles the performance of 2020, and we'll be increasing these to have full coverage. And then the next one talks to the premature mortality due to NCDs reduced to 26%. So for this particular one, we are busy with the National Strategic Plan for NCDs, which will cover a comprehensive set of interventions that needs to be built in, and that will then be implemented going over the year. And then the next one, the next output talks to the multi-sectoral strategy to guide implementation of national tobacco control, which will start in 2021. And then over the years, then the implementation will take place. The next output talks to patients being admitted to designated psychiatric hospitals. So we then are aiming to start with 75 and increase it to 125 by 2023-24. The next outcome, which talks to quality and safety of care, the output there is the number of medical officers and professional nurses trained to improve their skills in clinical management of mental disorders. And so the 2021 target is 500 medical officers and professional nurses that will be trained in the management of mental health disorders, and then we will also have the same number for this following year. And then the next outcome talks to the maternal child infant and neonatal mortality reduced. So for the 2021 year, we will be aiming for maternity care guidelines developed and approved, as well as the neonatal care guidelines developed and approved, which will then be implemented in the next coming year. Then moving on to primary health care program, which implements legislation, policies, norms and standards for a uniform, well-functioning district health system, including emergency and environmental health services. So the first outcome is of quality and safety of care improved, and the first output is the one of implementing National Quality Improvement Program. And so for 2021, we aim to have 100 primary health care facilities and 80 hospitals implementing this program, and we will improve by 20 to 25% in the next following year, and the out year by 50%. And then the next output is the one of the ideal clinics, where in 2021 we aim to have 2,100 primary healthcare facilities, and will increase to 2,200 and 2,250 in the out year. And then the next one output talks to the policy on traditional medicine approved and implementation commenced. So for 2021, we will be having the policy and implementation of the guidelines approved and implemented since they started the drafting in the 2020 financial year. And then for the ports of entry output, we aim to have 18 ports of entry compliant with international standards of regulations based on self-assessment. So these numbers will be increased to 25 and 50 in the during the entry. And then the next one talks to the outcome of community participation promoted to ensure health system responsiveness and effective management of their health needs. So the output, that the first output we have under this one is to have the clinic committees that are effective. And so then the 2021 target is to actually have 200 clinics testing the guidelines for measuring effectiveness of clinic committees, and will increase to 500 in the following year. And then the next output talks to the number of clients lost to follow up for treatment traced by community healthcare workers, where we have 250,000 for 2021 and increased, and then I have 400,000 for 2022 and 400,000 for 2023. And then the other one, or the third output under this outcome, will be the primary healthcare facilities with ward-based outreach teams, where we have target of 1 to 50 for the current financial year, which will be doubled in the following financial year and cover all the facilities in the following year. And then this one, which still talks to the quality and safety of care improvement. So we have got the target with regards to the number of metropolitan and district municipalities that perform 55% that perform below 55% assess for compliance with national environmental health norms and standards. So then for 2021, we have got a target of 11, and 2022 is 21, and 2023 is 20. And then with regards to compliance, number of provinces assessed for compliance with emergency medical regulations. So we have got the 2021 target as 9 provinces that will be assessed. And then the other years will, out of this assessment, then we'll have the quality improvement plans, which must be then implemented and monitored in upcoming years. Then moving to hospital services, with regards to hospital services program 5, this program is responsible for national policy on hospital services and also quality improvement for hospitals, as well as the management of national tertiary services grant. And lastly, the planning of infrastructure that meets the country's needs. So the outcome that is being addressed here is the financing and delivery of infrastructure projects that need to be improved, and the output will be the number of primary health care facilities constructed or revitalized, for which the numbers for 2021 is 40, same number for 2022 and 45 for 2023. And then the second one is the one for number of hospitals constructed or revitalized. And 2021 figure is 21, and then the following one year is 30, and 2023 is 50. And then the last one under this outcome is the number of public health facilities maintained, repaired, and refurbished, for which we plan for 120 public health facilities this year, which includes clinics, hospitals, nursing colleges, EMS base stations, and then it will increase to 150 and 200 during the MCAS. And then the last program is the one of program six, which is health systems, governance, and human resources. So then for this program, we have got the integrated health systems planning, monitoring, evaluation, as well as research. We've got the human resources for health, as well as the nursing program and the entities that report to the department. So the first outcome that is addressed by this program is quality and safety of care improved. And the output is the number of nursing colleges supported to achieve accreditation for basic and specialist nursing and midwifery programs. So for 2020, the basic nursing was covered through the 9 public nursing colleges that got accredited. And then in 2021, then we have a target of 9 public nursing colleges supported to achieve accreditation for specialist nursing and midwifery program. And then the second one talks to the provinces that are supported to implement the plan for strengthening clinical governance. So we have got the target of 9 provinces that needs to develop implementation plans for strengthening clinical governance. And then another outcome of staff equitably distributed and having right skills and attitudes, we've got the target of community service policy published for 2021, and then implemented and monitored in the outer years. And then the second output is the one of 90% of eligible students that are allocated to health facilities for community service. And for 2021, and for all the years, we are aiming at least to get 90% of the eligible students. And then for information systems, we are aiming for the sites registered to use the electronic vaccination data system, and the target for this year is 500, the following year 1,500, and 2,000 for the out year. And then the next outcome talks to adaptive learning and decision making, improved through the use of strategic information and evidence, in which we're looking at having the priorities of research produced and implemented in the RCS. And then the information systems are responsive to local needs to enhance data use and quality of care. So for this one, the output is alpha version of the network TB HIV Black Information Systems developed, which then will be achieved in 2021 and then tested and implemented as we go forward. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll hand over to the CFO to take us through the financial information.
Thank you, Chair. I'll go through the financial position and also pick up on some few salient points. First slide shows the position for the next financial year, which sits at 62.5 billion rand. I've broken it down to show you the distribution between voted funds, earmarked funds, conditional grants direct, as well as indirect conditional grants. And you can see that 52 billion will go towards conditional grants as an indirect. The program position is as reflected there. You can do the next slide for us, Julie. Next slide. The compensation, Chair, is at 845 million. That's actually a reduction of about 60 million over the next financial year. And that obviously would impact greatly on our ability to appoint new staff members and even to retain existing staff. Goods and services has got an earmarked fund of 4.7 billion, which includes the COVID vaccine funding, both for distribution and for purchasing, as well as the COVAX agreement of 1.8 billion. But as you can see, close to 54 billion of our budget does go towards assisting provinces either with conditional grants or indirect grants. Next slide. So just to reiterate the point that our baseline was decreased across all economic classifications due to economic pressures and as a result of COVID-19, there has been some addition or once-off allocations for COVID-19 in the current financial year and the last and the coming financial year, as well in the last financial year, which adds up to closely 10 billion round. The ceiling for compensation was reduced by about 12%. That 12%, as I said, accounts to, or amounts to about 60 million rand, and the pressure that will come with that. Our goods and services budget at a once-off allocation of 4.3 billion for the procurement of COVID-19 vaccines. And just to mention that we also have to fund the logistical part of the vaccines from this funding. And we've already put in a number of business cases back to National Treasury to show them the impact of this, as well as the additional funding that might be required during the financial year. We had obviously had to take some reductions on the NHI grants under Program 2 and Program 5, which I will talk to in a second. We've had some additional funds allocated to our Program 1. As you know, we've been going through a relocation exercise in the last financial year, and with that comes quite a number of expenditures, of which IT is one of the biggest. And we've had to deal with all these related, call it hidden costs as well, coming with the relocation. Next slide, please. The transfers and subsidies, as well as to non-profit institutions, essentially our NGOs, was reduced with 3% and 13% respectively. From this, Chair, you will see that we've tried to protect the direct grant allocation significantly. Our initial indication from Treasury was that we needed to reduce by between 5 and 6% year on year. We've managed to reduce that to some extent, but the NGOs has taken a considerable reduction in their budgets. SANAC is the one exception, which would receive a once-off increase of 10 million for the next financial year, and then we'll have to see it take a position on their future funding. The capital assets, mostly in our case, sits on the NHI indirect grants, and that's for the construction and refurbishment
of health facilities on behalf of provinces, as this is a Schedule 6 grant. That portion was reduced by 107 million. The other portion that was earmarked or that was ring-fenced was for the Limpopo Academic Hospital, and the balance of the reduction comes from that program. The progress on that program has been extremely slow, and that's why we re-looked and repurposed some of the funding on that program. The allocation for the procurement of machinery and equipment under the indirect grant also has been decreased, especially under Program 2 and 5, and that's a direct function of the reduction of the budget on the facilities program. When it comes to the NDOH in particular, the capital allocations across all the programs have had some increase in certain instances and some decreases, and mostly that would have been for the procurement of IT equipment and furniture due to our relocation to our new building. Next slide, please. So, Chair, just looking at quite a busy slide, but trying to show the impacts of the indirect grants over the MTF period, you will see in the first instance that the CCMDD program would take a deduction of about 43 million on the non-personal services components of the NHI. The National Health Facility Revive component, about 287 million, and as I explained, 107 is part of the refurbishment and the balance on the Limpopo Academic Hospital. Other significant movements on that is the medical stock surveillance system, takes a reduction of about 59 million. And although, Chair, I can say that between the health patient registration system and the medicine stock surveillance system, we're also addressing the COVID-19 IT needs, but this will put significant pressure on those two programs as we have to reprioritize and reposition our budget continuously. On this slide, I've also added the COVAX 19 component. It says COVID-19 vaccine component of 1.8 billion. We have taken a view also together with Treasury that the 4.3 billion plus the 1.8 billion is what will be used for the vaccine purchases. And if need be, we will repurpose these funds further to that program. But as it stands, at the time of allocation of funds, 1.8 billion was allocated for the COVAX agreements. Next slide, please. So, Chair, just to summarize, so the overall reduction on our indirect grants was about 16%. If you discount the COVID ones, the COVID allocation, it means that we're looking at a 21%, or the increase seems to be 21%. But if you discount the COVID allocation, then the reduction is about 16.3%. We mentioned the issue of the reduction on infrastructure indirect grants of about 19.6%, as well as the non-personal services. Obviously, these reductions would have an impact on our nationally managed programs, especially infrastructure on behalf of provinces. And we have taken a view on some of these projects in terms of critical maintenance, as well as projects that are within the tender stage and has not gone out to tender yet, and those that can be postponed that are in planning stage, we'll have to do that. And we're continuously updating our infrastructure plan with this information. We've also established in the last couple of financial years the oncology services in underserved provinces. And we'd like to maintain that as far as possible. And we're still assisting provinces with this, in particular KZN and Eastern Cape, to some extent Limpopo. But we also count on provinces to claim, you know, for these funds back from national departments. But we are engaging provinces, and the process actually is going quite well in terms of them claiming these funds. Next slide, please. So, Chair, the direct grants in total, we've had a reduction of 1.8 billion year on year on the total direct conditional grants. Our National Tertiary Services Grant, NTSG, about 986 million was reduced. Although there has been some allocations within the HIV grant, in particular to the HIV component. And you will see under that component, there's a 1.5 billion that was allocated. And this is to assist provinces with the COVID-19 challenges and also with their own distribution and logistical matters in the provinces, and also to assist them with the purchasing of consumables for the COVID-19. But unfortunately, you will see that the component in total has taken a reduction of about 345 million year on year. And more concerning is that that trend kind of continues over the MTF with a 1.4 billion in the 22-23 and a 3.6 billion in the 23-24 financial year. The unfortunate part of all these reductions is that it really takes us back in real terms to three or four financial years previously. So we haven't, so if you look at the allocations, say 3 years ago, they're pretty much the same as the current allocations, which means that we've really negatively grown in real terms over the MTF. Next slide, please, Lee. So as I said, the overall reduction is about 3.4% or 1.8 billion. We have tried to protect the allocation as far as possible. And I think we've you know, given the current circumstances, succeeded with that in the current financial year. But the next financial years are going to be tough for us to do that. The major reduction on the NTSG, NTSG is your National Tertiary Services Grant of about a billion and the HIV component of 1.6 billion. And but having said that, Jay, if you've read the numbers, you would see that a lot of funds there were repurposed for the COVID-19 interventions. So we do recognize that this would have serious implications. We need some rationalization of services and maybe a relook at our services platform going forward. The maintenance of current services would also be very difficult. For instance, the initiation of new patients' ART program might be extremely difficult or even impossible for the current MTF period. There needs to be some initiatives to modernize our tertiary services, and the establishment of newer services might have to be postponed. The cross-border referrals will continue, which will have a direct effect on payment on patients, but more importantly, yeah, it would have a bigger impact on provinces like the Gauteng province and probably Western Cape as well. Chair, having said all of this, our department continuously sit down with provinces. We reassess the financials as far as possible. We try to support our provincial CFOs not only with funding, but also with their planning and the budget planning. But we've had some significant reductions even in provincial budgets, and the discussions on how to further effectively reduce expenditure becomes very difficult in those circumstances. So, Chair, I think I will leave it at this point. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Just to pick up on the few things that were raised by the Financial and Fiscal Commission or on your budget, they are picking up and comparing the budgets of last year and this financial year, and they're saying the difference between the two budgets shows the policy shift in the fiscus for the year ahead and contextualizes it as a real fiscal value signaling the government's intention. Now, you have to talk to this outside the Minister of Finance, because they are really raising these issues. They are not really providing answers. The other point they are raising is the process of employment, where they are saying the substantial difference between the number of posts in 2020-21 and the 2020-21 MTF for the junior, middle, and senior management positions within the department is a cause for concern, decreasing it from 910 overall to 776. So you're cutting down on already the number of people that you have on an already challenged health system. Of course, because of this, that is why maybe if you can't provide answers, we need to also find space and time to also ourselves speak to the Minister of Finance. They are probably also raising the total number of individuals registered in the National Health Insurance Patient Beneficiary Register has moved from 46 to 50 million. However, the government does not provide insight on how the registry integrates data from other data systems across public, across private public sectors to ensure information aligned between systems and for efficiency of national health care services. I may not be exhaustive, but these are some of the things that they are raising as a financial and fiscal commission. Now, I'll take honorable members who have indicated their desire to engage with the presentation in the following order. Honorable members, just come one after the other. I'll give you your numbers as you have indicated in our group. First one is Honorable Munyai, followed by Honorable Gela. Third, Honorable Chirwa. Number four, Honorable Ismail. Number five, Honorable Kwah. Number seven, Honorable Wilson. Number eight, Honorable Dr. Jacobs. Number nine would be the last, Honorable Chengwa. Those are the hands that I've received so far. Any other hands that I might add?
Am I not okay. Number six, Chief? Sorry, just I couldn't hear. I'm number six.
Yes, number six. Yes.
Thank you, sir. Yeah.
And Sokara Chief indicates this is 10.
Number 10 will be Honorable Sokacha. Has Honorable Dr. Tibikwai arrived? She indicated she was going to be late, but she's coming. Okay, so far we end with Honorable Sokacha. Honorable members, come one after the other, starting with Honorable Munyai. Thanks.
Honorable Chair, I must say that we broadly approved as Parliament the broad budget of the that has been presented by Minister Chitombeweni. And I'm sure here we should really support our budget of the department. And I'm sure, as you said in your introduction, that we'll have to request a meeting with the portfolio with the Minister Chitombeweni to further engage on some areas that we think we need to raise, especially of the areas of budget cuts, such that at least the minister could really help us with the prioritization of those areas. But also the other thing is that let's also welcome the vaccine funding, 10 billion. This is further immediate response towards the COVID-19, which we all know has really brought some unprecedented consequences, negative consequences. So I think the collective response and fight against the pandemic by the department efforts should be really be welcome. And the only area, Chair, which we must say that is to support you, the initiative that you made in your introductory remarks to request the Minister and the Deputy and subsequently to invite the Minister of Finance, such that the key programs areas should be supported, especially the National Health Insurance, and as well as the sustaining, you know, and I know there's a progress of training of more than 2,000 graduates, which has happened 2 years ago, and or at least last year, of Dr. Nelson Mandela and Dr. Fidel Castro. Cuba is undisputed leader of the primary health care. It is very important that we strengthen NHI introduction would help to strengthen the weaknesses that has been exposed during the COVID-19. So that is the spirit in which we need to go to budget debate. We need to to raise those issues, because as much as we support, I think it's important that we highlight the areas of concern. So, but we know that the ministry and the deputy minister, they don't deal with budget, but the budget in the main is dealt with by the Minister of Finance. We need to persuade the Minister of Finance to strengthen the support on the key program areas that we have concern about. So that will be my input, my contribution, Honorable Chair. And we should support that effort, that we engage with the Minister and the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Health to ensure that going forward, the reprioritization on the NHI and any other progressive areas are really supported. That will be my input. And as the ANC, we are behind the budget with those concerns that I've raised. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the report and also align myself with Honorable Munyai on the issue of NHI. We really support the NHI 100% that it must be implemented to address all the challenges that we are faced in the health system. And the other issue, Chairperson, I want to support you. I fully agree with you that we need to have a meeting with the Minister of Finance, and also looking to the issue of budget cuts in our department, because really health is a very important entity to save lives of our society in the country. So if that meeting can be convened, so that at least we engage the Minister of Finance to relook the issue of budget cutting in our department. The questions that I want to raise, Chairperson, from the presentation as follow. The first question, how has the COVID-19 pandemic affected the National Department of Health? That will be my first question. And can the department recover over on the programs? I know that we have not implemented some of the programs because of the COVID-19, as indicated in the presentation. There's a little bit low implementation of some of the programs. Number two, the number of targets have been reduced compared to the APP of last year. I just want to know why is that. The other question, how has the department addressed issues raised by AG findings, the misalignment of the principles outlined in the revised framework for strategic plans? The other question, how is the department going to deal with the infrastructure backlog? And also, lastly, Chairperson, I think we are noting the budget cut in the Department of Health by Treasury due to economic status or due to COVID-19 pandemic that is faced our country. But we are not happy, especially because health is a very important stakeholder, as I indicated before. We need more budget, actually, to implement all our key programs that we set aside as our target for the financial year. A particular slide 33 and slide 34, because are very important to the country and also to the society. But also this issue of reduction under TNSG, the 1 billion, and also the HIV components, really, it's really frustrating. Hence, I'm saying we need to relook and also to engage the Minister of Finance to make sure that at least we correct some of the issues, and maybe he must reconsider actually so that at least we move as a Department of Health. But so far, we are noting the report and hoping that all issues that are being raised by AG will be addressed by the department. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the Minister and team. I also have a few questions here. But firstly, noting that vital programs have been defunded, really, and we know that this will come with regression. And even pre-COVID-19, the regression has been imminent in the National Department of Health. I'm talking in particular to the TB and HIV program. Knowing already as a Minister of Health, as the NDOH, what this defunding means, what this regression means generally for everybody in this country, more infections, more deaths, more spread of TB and HIV, because testing and all these programs and the funding of these programs are vital to curb the spread and to also ensure that people have access to medication and all those things. This is going to be impacted. It doesn't take a scientist to really note this. We know this historically speaking and all of that. But this has not been communicated or impacted how the messaging of the department is happening. And I'll give it a very small example. For example, you spent 82 million rands on digital vibes for social media management and all of that. And yet things like, for example, right now on Twitter and Facebook, there is this debacle called Kheu that keeps trending, and it feeds into the stigmatization of HIV all over again. The department hasn't responded to this. The department hasn't navigated around the conversations that are happening that actually prove to make us aggress even further, despite the fact that the funding for this kind of thing is already there. You have not changed your modus operandi to function like a department that is facing a catastrophic situation of being defunded. You have not come up to tell us how do you plan to manage the new circumstances, because it's not going to change anytime soon. It's as if we're just receiving these things as they come and just hoping for the best. And we've raised this issue of we are committing to this, we are hoping for this, we are aspiring. It doesn't cut it anymore. We need tangible efforts by the ministry and the department to tell us this and this is happening. This is how we plan to solve it as a Minister of Health leading the Ministry of Health. Unless if it's something you can't do, then you must communicate it as well. We know we are facing real challenges here. We don't know how to go about this. Instead of waiting for a catastrophic end to happen and then only then seeking out and taking heed to the recommendations we've been giving into this committee, portfolio committee, for the past 2 years. As in, what now? How has the modus operandi changed to match the circumstances that you're in? Another thing, we are talking about 40 million people being vaccinated, knowing very well that 4 billion, and I'm now hearing that 10 billion is allocated for COVID vaccines by Treasury in your quest to vaccinate the country. But we know already that 10 billion or 4 billion will not vaccinate 41 million people. Why is this not being communicated to the public? Why is this not being communicated? Honestly, these plans, you keep giving these plans in press briefings that we will vaccinate. Our plan is to vaccinate 40 million people by 2022, knowing very well you don't have the money to do that. Where is it going to come from? And another issue that even hangs on to this particular issue, the fact that the chief of the EFF already wrote the portfolio committee chairperson requesting for the Minister of Finance to come in last year already. The fact that this is something that we are still talking about, even namhlanje, is also frustrating on the part of the portfolio committee, because it means that political allegiance for this portfolio committee has weighed a heavier responsibility than actually holding the department accountable. So even if we raise the issues of the AG, we must also, the portfolio committee, take heed on how we have fallen short
to applaud ministers, to applaud provincial executives, knowing very well that the work that they're bringing to our table is insufficient and cannot be sustained, and is actually very concerning. We've raised the issue of putting Eastern Cape under administration because of issue of maladministration, of corruption, of mismanagement of funding. The minister rejected that heed, and then the AG comes to tell us that things have gone south. Only now the portfolio committee wants to act concerned. You can't. You are faking a concern. This concern was raised last year already in front of the minister with the portfolio committee chairperson, and there's various members of this portfolio committee that asked that put Eastern Cape under administration. Did you do that? No, you didn't. So it is, for me, it's a very deep issue, because I feel like we want to respond when already it's already on the ground. When these issues have been raised consistently in this portfolio committee, you have defended MECs who come in here to present mediocre work. You have defended them and given them an applause and thanked them for the good work that they are doing. You've done the same for the Minister of Health.
Is that address for the response of a department, or is to a debate with the members of the portfolio committee? Just the last part that you are raising now.
It is part of my comments to the minister and to the portfolio committee, because we're having a meeting of the portfolio committee with the minister, right? So we are having an engagement, Sonke. I would really appreciate to not be policed in this regard, because these are things that I feel need to be sent to the portfolio committee. And if it makes them uncomfortable, well, hard luck. We just have to continue. And you will do as you've been doing all along and just shutting me down or taking me out of the portfolio committee meeting because you are feeling uncomfortable. Another issue, more than 200 qualified medical interns still don't have posts in South Africa, despite the fact that you have come to this portfolio committee and said this thing will be resolved early April. It has not been resolved. You have not said anything on this. And it's still the situation even today. What must happen? What will be done right now? It means you have come and misled the portfolio committee time and time and again on time frames, on execution, on targets, and all of those things that keep changing. There is no commitment to anything but a commitment to basically just shield the failures of the NDOH and the minister. We have raised the issues that are being raised by the AG continuously. We have raised the issue of poor coordination and leading provinces in management and finances in Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and the Eastern Cape. This was raised on the 26th of October 2020. The minister took no heed. We've recommended for Eastern Cape to be put under administration. The minister took no heed. We've recommended and highlighted the issue of data collection and reporting from provinces to be misleading. The minister didn't take heed. This PC itself has been complicit, and I repeat, in the regressive behavior by being cheerleaders of provinces and the minister that present mediocre work right here. And you will want to feign concern over the AG report when these concerns were already raised in this portfolio committee. So I want to know what must happen. Are we now going to pretend that the call to call the Minister of Finance comes now, when it was given already last year, because we know the Minister of Health doesn't have the prerogative of financing himself? We already called for the Minister of Finance. How does the portfolio committee respond to that, the chairman of the portfolio committee? It's already May. When was the letter to the Minister of Finance sent? When this was communicated last year already? And most importantly, why do you continue to communicate that 40 million people will be vaccinated in this particular financial term, when you know you don't even have half of the money to vaccinate 20 million people or 30 million people? Why is it still being communicated as something that is a plan, as something that will be done on public platforms, on TV, on radio, everywhere? Your department is going around communicating that you need 40 million people, but you don't have the money to do that.
Hold on. There's a point of order called by Honorable Dr. Jacobs.
Chairperson, I'm very concerned about the manner, firstly, that one honourable member is allowed to vent in the way that the member is venting. Number two, I find it very difficult that we can be so abusive to other people on public platforms as people to each other. I do have a big concern about that, Chair. I would like you to intervene. And thirdly, the same abuse happened the other day, verbal abuse it is not correct that we speak to other people in the way that we do. And fourthly, that the minister is not on this platform here to listen to this and to be able to respond to this. And then fifthly, we had the same debate in Parliament yesterday, and the president had, for example, given answers to some of these points. I am asking you to intervene when this happens in our portfolio committee meeting, that members go and they are abusive to other people on a public platform. Please, Chair. Thank you.
Can I continue?
Honourable Dr. I haven't responded. Ask for my Honourable Dr. Jacobs. It is actually a challenge, but if people have that in them to be abusive, it's something that we need to actually deal with it outside this meeting, because I've already asked for other measures. Look, the discussion that some of the members have requested that we have a house chair because of this abusive and irrational behavior of some of the members is exactly that part. We'll have to deal with that. We postponed to deal with it because we thought we should just get to know how members should actually be cordial and address each other with this type of. So this type of thing that is going on is not the first time it's going on, but we have requested to make it sorted out somehow. But I can't instruct an adult to behave properly and address people with cordiality if she chooses not to.
Continue. Of course you will not. You don't even tell MECs to stop being corrupt. You provinces come in here, steal money of the people. You don't get upset. You get upset at me saying the ministry is the misleading us. What is cordial about corruption? What is cordial about misleading the nation that 40 million people will be vaccinated when there's no money to do that? What is cordial about that? What is cordial about PPE corruption that you also saw yesterday? Everyone here was feigning concern. What is cordial about that? People are dying. Corruption is murder. There is no consent. There's no cordiality. This does not deserve cordiality when people are being refused access to healthcare, are being refused access to primary healthcare. Vaccination is primary healthcare. It is an obligation and mandatory position of the NTOH, which is not being fulfilled. And this portfolio committee is overseeing all of that happening. How is this being uncordial by raising it? If the problem is my tone, then say that. If the problem is me being emotive, then raise that you're uncomfortable, not that I'm speaking a lie or that I'm being abusive. There's nothing abusive with telling you or telling the ministry that they're not doing a good job, because they are not. The AG is saying that as well. You were agreeing with the AG yesterday. You even asked him to come back. But today you're going to say that I'm being uncordial by raising the very same thing because it is emotive. Of course it is an emotive issue. People are dying. We don't have vaccines. We won't have vaccines because there is no money for that. People are being misled every day.
Go to your points. Don't debate this matter any further. Go to the points that you want to raise.
I'm showing discomfort because you want us to raise your discomfort. As if your discomfort is an issue. It's not an issue. People don't have vaccines. And the ministry is misleading us as a portfolio committee, telling us that they will vaccinate 40 million people with 4 billion. With 4 billion, that is not going to happen. Change that presentation and come and present things that are going to be tangible. And if it is not going to be tangible, stop presenting to this portfolio committee. Stop telling us that you will ensure that all medical interns will be absorbed by early April when still 200 has not been absorbed. Is that not abusive? Is that not the ministry abusing South Africans? That is abusive. But now we must talk about how you guys feel about how I am talking.
Chairperson, please, I've asked you to intervene. The point of order, I'm asking you again to allow me one member of this portfolio committee.
Your emotions are not that important. I'm raising issues that I consent to a constituency and ensure that I'm in this portfolio committee, and I will not regret because you feel uncomfortable. It is not you who is abusing me. I represent a constituency that will be represented, whether you feel comfortable or not. You continue applauding the minister, continue stepping for them. I will not do that. I will not step for them.
We are sick and tired of listening, Chirwa.
Be sick and tired of corruption.
Being sick and tired of that.
Tired of corruption, but
yes,
sir. Tired of you being able to come through.
Be tired of corruption. Be tired of corruption. Be tired of
talking.
I have instructed the portfolio committee support staff to take honorable, who I don't know why I've even called her, Honorable Chiro, out of the platform. She will not be part of this meeting anymore. Can I, Honorable Ismail, you had a challenge, and I asked you to write your questions, or I'll jump you now. You indicate I'll give you seconds if you are able to speak now. Otherwise, I'll come to you later.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for the presentation. I hope you can hear me, Chair.
Yes,
I have a question. Thank you. How was the decline in the primary health
program? Before we continue, Ms. Lindogu said, don't ever bring Honorable Chira back to this meeting until the end of this meeting today. She doesn't come back.
Okay. Thank you. Once again, good morning and thank you for the presentation. I have
Honorable Chair,
how will the decline in the primary health care program's budget affect service delivery? My second question, how will the district health services be affected by the reduction in budget? Also, please provide a report on how this will actually affect our emergency medical services in the country. Now, looking at this budget, how does the decline in the budget for human resources for health program affect service delivery? I mean, which services will be affected and how? I'm really, you know, zooming into service delivery at the ground root level. Also, please, can your presentation hasn't touched on it. Can we get a report on the backlog of forensic chemistry laboratories? This is a concern that has been highlighted to me by the South African Nursing Council, and I just wanted some feedback for them. Please advise when the minister, or maybe in this case the deputy minister can advise us, when the minister is going to be appointing an appeals committee for the South African Nursing Council, as stated in the Nursing Act. I'm told that this is delaying processes for a number of years. How is the country preparing to deal with the other variants of COVID-19 entering the country and the possible third wave occurring? What strategies and plans are in place to prevent or limit future global pandemics affecting the country? Now, we know that the HR report is very dismal with regard to fiscal management. And looking at this budget and, you know, the reductions in this budget, this is actually quite perturbing and quite concerning. But I have a few other questions now that, Chair, that I would like the Deputy Minister to assist with. Please advise what methods does the department use of placing community service doctors at locations? We are aware that, you know, we have a reduction in budget, that, you know, we may obviously be, I'm assuming, losing some health personnel. So this is where community service doctors are going to be very essential to us. But we find community service doctors complaining and reporting that, their voices are not being heard. They are placed in areas where they are not happy. Even when they communicate with the necessary provincial departments, they're not getting assistance. And please, can you provide details on how and why married couples are separated and what measures are being put in place to prevent this in the future? Because as they are being placed, families are being separated, and this is obviously negatively affecting them. Now, many doctors have still not been placed at all. What measures are being put in place to assist these doctors as soon as time possible? And by when can we expect results? This is inclusive also of some of them that have the community service doctors that have not been paid as yet as well. Now, how many married couples have been separated and how many have been relocated back in their preferred location? If we could get a feedback or report back on that. Another issue that was brought to my attention is forensic pathologists have highlighted one of their main concerns, which is the stagnation of the forensic structure by the National Department of Health. Even the Labour Court ordered that the finalisation of this matter, yet there is no finalisation even after 4 years. Please, can we get a report back on this, when this matter will be finalised, and possibly a report on, you know, where this is right now? My last question, Deputy Minister, please advise how our students in Cuba assisted. The last we know was that a flight was going out to Cuba where parents were requested to fill 23 kilogram bags with necessities. I've been in communication with some of our students in Cuba, and they are really crying, saying that, you know what, the bags have not reached them as yet, and they are getting no assistance from the department. Please, if you could provide us with the feedback on this. Thank you very much.
Yes, I'm here. Thanks. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to quickly just run through my questions by the various programs. So I'm going to start with the financials. I understand what was communicated, that a portion of 3.4% of the, it will, there's a reduction of about 3.4%. from the budget. And of course, I mean, I think we can all appreciate the fact that this is obviously due to the pandemic and having to have had to reprioritize a lot of the programs, particularly around infrastructure. But my main concern, Deputy Minister and your team, is that as things stand, as things stood 2 years ago, and things have essentially worsened during this time, that there's a massive problem of vacancy rates in many of our facilities. In many of the facilities that I visit, a lot of their problems also emanate from the fact that there's massive vacancy rates. There are a number of people who are simply acting for a number of years. They can't fill posts, it's a very basic post. And what it seems to me, Deputy Minister, is that there's a problem of a bloating of an administration at a provincial level at the expense of frontline serving employees. And I just want to understand, I mean, I can understand that we have financial problems, but I mean, what is the way forward? Because I mean, without staff, you legitimately cannot roll out the health service. And if you have a problem of medical legal claims, massive vacancy rates in your facilities will only exacerbate that. So it almost seems to me that this is a vicious cycle that will never end. If you get budget cuts, you don't fill your purse, and then you get massive medical legal aid, bills, and essentially you're just like in a vortex. And at some point, the department has to come up with some kind of strategy, because ultimately, I mean, financial problems are going to remain with us for a long time. And it seems to me that the answer lies in reducing top management and a bloated administration at the expense of frontline serving employees. Then the other issue is around the infrastructure, the infrastructure budget, which is now obviously going to be one of the line items that are massively affected. And I just want to understand, you know, of course, in line with the fact that now there's prioritization of funds, how are you going to make sure that you're also dealing a lot with maintenance issues? Again, going around the country to various facilities, a lot of the facilities are saying, look, I mean, we're not asking for new facilities. We're not asking for massive capital projects being built, but we're asking for the ability to be able to fix the broken windows, for the ability to make sure that things are running all right. And these are basic things, and I just want to understand, because that's now my concern, that yes, we can't achieve big things, but now it seems as though we are going to be stinging ourselves on even the most basic of the health system. Then I want to move on to Program 3, and this was raised by my colleagues before me, but I do want to ask this in very clear terms so that the Deputy Minister, so that it's not lost in the chaos. Deputy Minister, if I look at your presentation properly from the department, it says here that, can you confirm that now has the 40 million target for vaccinations been pushed out to essentially 2021, 2022, or 2023? What is the actual a target here? Because it seems to me that the realistic target that the department has set itself is around 16 million people, of which I think it's only fair, as the previous honorable member said, it's only fair then that it is communicated, because for as long as I've asked you, I've asked the minister, I've asked numerous people in Parliament, what is the target? Have targets shifted? If so, communicate that effectively to people so that people can understand what your targets are. But we can't keep banding on about a 40 million South Africans vaccinated by year end when we are yet to begin the vaccination rollout in 10 days' time. Then my second last question is around the readiness of the system in terms of being able to roll out the vaccine. I understand that's not necessarily in the APP as such, but obviously that really speaks to around primary healthcare facilities in particular. So I want to understand, I mean, from your perspective, Deputy Minister, I mean, are primary healthcare facilities ready? Again, from my visits across the country, the hospitals seem to be jacked up, but a lot of the clinics that are going to be getting their vaccines from these bigger hospitals don't seem to have sufficient cold storage capacity, IT systems that are running. And so I want to understand, how is this being being addressed? And then lastly, the issue around registration. Now, Minister, we are exactly 10 days away from starting phase two of the vaccine rollout. As far as I can tell, there hasn't been a concerted effort from the department to raise awareness for people to get registered. It's simply not enough to talk about it in these meetings, but we need to have messages that reach people where they are. Have community radio ads been placed? Have community newspapers been utilized? How much money is being spent in notifying people where they need to register, how they need to register, so that this phase can be a success? Because we know the department is spending millions on dubious communication contracts, but I'm yet to see anything tangible that's coming from notifying South Africans about registration. Thank you very much, Chair.
Can I continue, Chair?
Go ahead, Honourable Van Staden.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Deputy Minister and the team of the department and members. As the budget of the current budget of 62 billion, my question there is, what is the current total budget shortage? Then, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Deputy Minister, every year we see and hear from this department the most beautiful plans around strategic plans and annual performance plans and targets. But never do I hear how these targets are going to be reached. And also never ever do I see any concrete plans from this department to eradicate the huge problems we are currently having in our hospitals, like the service delivery problems, like the halting of operations due to COVID, like the shortage of doctors and nurses, interns not getting placed or paid, the shortage of medicines and equipment, the shortage of water problems, hospitals burning down, etc., the shortage of hospitals and clinics itself, the massive litigations against this department, infrastructure problems at hospitals and clinics, patients dying at the moment due to these problems, the massive corruption problem we have in this department. And I think of all these things I've mentioned now, we urgently need reports on all these matters from the department. My question, however, is, when will we see, as a portfolio committee and as South Africans, concrete plans from this department to eradicate all these big problems that I've mentioned now, which is currently busy completely destroying everything in our public healthcare service? You're currently spending millions and millions of rands on an NHI system, but you will not be able to launch unless all of these problems that I've mentioned now is completely eradicated. Rather, we take that millions and that it's currently wasting on this NHI program, and that we cannot afford at this moment, and we sort out all the problems in our public health system, or rather to buy more vaccines for the population. But we need to see concrete recovery plans from this department. We can't go in year in and year out by not seeing any concrete recovery plans, how to turn this department around, how to turn our hospitals and clinics and all these problems turning it around in this department. My last question is also on the vaccines. I just also want to hear from the Deputy Minister, according to him, by when will we reach the target of 40 million vaccinations in South Africa? That's all from me, Chair, for today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honourable Wilson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the department for the presentation, I think. We've been sitting in meetings the whole week, and it's actually been quite a depressing week, and I honestly to God didn't think I could get any more depressed than I was yesterday, particularly after the FSC and AG's reports. But I was too hopeful. I think this has got to be the most depressing and most disturbing report we've seen in a very, very long time. We were, most of us on this committee, were present at the NHI public hearings. And in every single public hearing, we heard the complaints about failing infrastructure, lack of staffing, lack of equipment, lack of medicines, lack of EMS services. And those are all critical to the health system. And these are the biggest concerns of the voters in this country, of the citizens in this country. And yet today we get a presentation that says we've got to cut the staffing in a system that is already seriously, seriously understaffed. The grant for construction and refurbishment has been reduced. In a day and age in South Africans' health systems where infrastructure is collapsing, where buildings are collapsing, where there's no equipment, where equipment is not working. It's just so desperately, desperately disturbing. And Ian, you yourself said it, this current situation is not going to be sustainable. It's one thing to have a collapsing health system. You and I are saying we can't sustain an already collapsed health system. That tears at my heart, because what we're dealing with here are the lives of South Africans. And without health, this country is nothing. If people are not healthy, if they are not able to work, if they are not able to function, we are facing not just the unsustainability of our health. We are talking about the unsustainability of millions of people. I'm really, really worried. You talk about, you know, we now have to rationalize or look at rationalization of services. Rationalization of what services? A lot of the services are not even there in the first place, and now you want to rationalize further. I think my questions are principally covered by the colleagues ahead of me. So mine is just literally a comment. This is disturbing. It is heartbreaking. And if we honestly to God really are insistent that we care about the South Africans and the well-being of our citizens in this country, and we get reports and situations like this, someone is trying to kid us. I am sorry. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, Dr. Jacobs.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have come a long way in ensuring that we train more doctors and other healthcare workers in South Africa. Now, we've had the challenges of our interns and some of our conserved trained people not being able to find employment. And so even that has been a lot of work in ensuring that employment is created for those. And now we also realized with COVID-19 the importance of those positions being filled, because essentially people will not get care without the healthcare workers being employed. And so now we see the reduction of compensation to employees on a year-on-year basis. I think it's about 3%. And so the question would be, what is the envisaged impact of all of this? Would that be on services? Would that be on retrenchments? Would that be that vacancies will not be filled? And so we also note further that reduction of 1 billion rand under the SDSG and the HIV components of 1.6 billion rand. And then there it is noted that it will result in implications of rationalization of services. It's a big, big challenge. It's a big, big worry. It is something that we need a proper explanation for. And then my second point is, or question is, can the department explain the reduction of a number of targets, for example, the maintenance of, and maintenance, repairs, and refurbishment of health care facilities from 150 to 120. Now, under the in the context of this budget, and then the very last question that I want to raise with regards to the issues raised by the AG in 2020. There were particular programs in 2, 5, and 6, or challenges in programs 2, 5, and 6. And the question is, how has the department addressed those issues? Difficult question. They might have to answer that one in writing. But it's just a question that I would like to raise. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mam Shengwa.
Chairperson, nginenkingana kancane kodwa ngiyacabanga ngiyasolve ngoba ngisebenzisa ucingo.
Siyakuzwa ma, siyakuzwa.
Ngiyathokoza ke baba. First of all, let me welcome the report and say this report was very comprehensive, although it was touching. It was a very comprehensive report. According to the report, we are all bound of this report. Ngicela lo msindo ke ngustopish. Thank you very much. This report is very touching because there's nothing we can do without money. Having said that, one will be very worried about it. My colleagues have talked about. I'm going to ask to the department is the findings or what we had to the Auditor General. Mine is going back to the provinces according to their performance that as a department, what steps are you going to take to those provinces who did not have a clear report on what they are doing about this money. Secondly, it's a clarity seeking question about the NHI because I had in the report talking about Limpopo, and then my dad, what about these 8 provinces? Are there enough infrastructure, enough capacitation to use this grant? That's why I'm saying the clarity. Thirdly, I'm talking about medical aid scheme. We all know that there are frauds when using the medical aid scheme. Is there any intervention of the Department of Health in this cry? If not, please, we are pleading the department to intervene in this cry of the fraud in our medical scheme. Thirdly, healthcare primary. Down there in the community, we have CCGs off with our community base. Those people are the one who goes further to the people and give them some tablets and look for them. Some of them, they are not even how to cook themselves. And these people are doing that. Which is called CCGs. when did the department absorb them so that they can get something? When the CCT die, I've seen this, when the CCT die, it doesn't, if we die in a month end, he has that month end of 1.5 only, and there's nothing else. That is a cry. And let me thank the department about the ideal clinic. In my area, we have an ideal clinic. There is doctors. There is a full service. Thank you for that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ma'am Sengwa. Last one, Honorable Sokacha.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the report from the Department of Health. It's highly appreciated. It raises a number of concerns. But first of all, Chair, I really wanted to indicate that, you know, there are many ways to raise and come up with your point. But to be rude and disruptive, it's not a way of raising your point. It's the way of making sure that the meeting is not going to continue. And that should not be the spirit of this, of us as members of this portfolio committee. We need to raise our points, sober-minded, and get answers from the points that we are raising. The first point, Chair, I want to agree with you and support you and applaud you on the issue of making sure that this committee calls the Minister of Finance. I think this is now the appropriate time. We should not just call the minister for the sake of calling him. But now there is an appropriate time, it's an appropriate need that we want to call the Minister of Finance. We have got really concerns, Chair, on this budget. We are supporting it, but we are raising our concerns that this budget, Chair, has got so many cuts on key programs, which is a concern for us as members of this portfolio committee. I fully want to agree with Comrade Minyaya and Comrade Keller on the issue of the NHI. I don't want to overemphasize what they have said. I just want to raise two issues on key programs that there are also cuts. The one, it's the 1.6 billion that has been cut on the HIV and AIDS grant, which clearly indicates, and the CFO have indicated, that there will be no new patients that will be put on the ART program, which is a problem. And the second one, I also want to agree with Honorable Kwahube and Honorable Jacobs on the issue of the inability of the department to appoint new staff. It's they have raised it. I don't want to repeat what they have said, but it's a real issue, Chair, of not being able to appoint staff. And we know that the Department of Health has got critical staff, doctors, nurses, you name them, and so on. We can't stay without being able to appoint in those critical staff. So I'm fully behind the proposal that we need to make sure that we invite the Minister of Finance. I just want to check from the Department, Chair, what is the status of donations? I don't know what, if my memory serves well, the USAID has been donating funds in as far as HIV and AIDS are concerned. Is that donation still available? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah, honourable members, even though I'm raising this in the presence of the department, but it happened also with them here, I would request that the honourable members assist the chair, because when we are here, we are an extension of the parliamentary sitting. When honourable members raise a point of order, please assist with the rule, so that we could actually say, on the basis of this rule, this is going this way. And therefore, we could then be able to defend and actually be able to deal with the issues of getting members out of or mute them on the basis of a particular rule. we will have to all work around that. So it may not always be coming in from the chair to rule out, but you to assist in that regard, so that we can also continue running these meetings. Because there's no one who comes to these meetings with a plan to collapse the meeting. We want to come to learn and also engage. But if things happen the way they happened, and you notice that the member concerned, I have actually thrown her out of this meeting several times because of this way of handling some of the issues. And also, let me just touch this point. We raised the issue of Minister of Finance, but at that time, it was really about the funding for the vaccines. Our since then, we got that budget information that there's 10 million allocated for vaccines. Yes, is this enough? Can we get more? That was a discussion going on to come for this. But I actually agree. Right now, it's a budget that is cutting across. To be on the devil's advocate, the Minister for Finance, that is why probably has to come in with the Minister for Health, because the Minister for Finance will say a decision was taken to top slice all departments by 3%. Let me make an information. Now, a 3% for the Department of Health is a huge budget to top slice a 50 billion amount. And then he will say, I did not instruct the Department of Health to go cut on the public service, to go and cut on the NHI budget. All that. They did that within their own rationale in terms of the budget. But the first thing is a cut of budget. But in terms of, if Deputy Minister, we can, it was your choice that the cutting of a 3% meant from you to reduce the employment from 900 to 700, to reduce this, that, and the other. And also rationalizing of what you are doing. So it will be a matter of bringing two ministers together to say, because I know decisions at that level are binding, but we as a portfolio committee are not in those meetings. We need to be appraised, to be educated. How do you not have the things that were raised by Honorable Wilson going forward, where things are already at a problem, at a collapse? We are now saying collapse even more. We need to be educated how the minister sees that process going forward. So if it is beyond you as health to really provide us answers, we then take it upon ourselves to invite him. He probably will find some answers for us, but we just cannot leave that oversight responsibility that we have as a portfolio committee. Hence, the letter is now gone to the Minister of Finance to reemphasize that if we did not need you then, if we did not see the need then, we'd see it even much more now. Deputy Minister and your delegation, can you then assist us with your responses?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Thank you for the questions and the comments, when there were comments. I would want to invite a DG with the team, and then whatever, I will note their responses. And then if there are gaps, I'll come in after them. DG, you can deploy as you want to do. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and thank you to the Honorable Members for the comments and the questions. We have a team available, but I will take quite a few questions, and then I will allow I'll allow Thuli, the CFO, and Dr. Anban Pillay to come and add on some of the issues. The first one that I'd really, and Dr. Makanya will also come in on HIV and TB programs and the catch-up plans, and they will come in that order. On my side, I really want to say the issue of the budget cut is a problematic one. And for us, we're now trying to prioritize and see where we are going to cut or limit, as you would have seen what the CFO presented. But unfortunately, the staffing is always the first one to be hit in some areas. Hence, you will find that we have quite a number of vacant positions. However, working with the provinces critically, we need to ensure that we try as much as possible and ensure that the frontline staff, that mainly the clinical staff, are actually not affected that much. But of course, in the admin side, the support side, though equally important, we'll try and see how that gets managed. But the teams are going to handle that one. And there's a few other issues that I want to take on before I hand over to Thuli. The one is the issue of the more than 200 interns not placed. The fact of the matter is the placement of interns is done in January and in July. So all the interns that were eligible for placement in January were placed. Now, there are interns who have just become eligible now. That is 220 in number. They became eligible now at the end of April, and they are ready for placement in July. We don't place in April. So the team is already working on that with the provinces. I've signed letters to the provinces, and they will be placed in July. So we don't place it at any other time. That's how the placement of interns. So that is those are the facts. So I think the member that raised the issue did not get that very well. I think the next issue that I want to touch on is the allocation of community service officers. As per the policy, firstly, I must mention that the allocation of interns and the allocation of community service officers is a statutory function that, as a state, we need to actually fulfill. So interns, as I've covered them, community service officers, we do the same. But specifically for community service officers, in terms of the policy, they should be placed in the underserved areas and in the rural areas because of the need. That is how we do it. That is the underlying policy for the placement of the community service officers. But of course, we do then get people with special circumstances, and we prioritize mostly the medical conditions where they need to be closer to some special facilities. We do get quite an influx of requests, people who are married, people who have got fiancés, people who want to be doing that. Unfortunately, we cannot accommodate them because then we'll be breaking our own policies. The kinds of requests that we get that come through to my office are just very high. And we look at those issues. And unfortunately, especially with the married couples, we can't always place the married couples together. It's always a difficult one. We do understand it's a bit problematic, but unfortunately, with the policy, we have to get people to the underserved areas. So that is how we actually deal with community service officers. Post-community service, those people are now qualified mainly as medical doctors or any other profession. Those people then have got the responsibility to apply for vacant medical officer positions if they are available. We try as much as possible to absorb them. Like we've done in this year, all the post-community service doctors were absorbed in the Eastern Cape because they had positions available. But it then becomes a bit problematic. Some then end up going to the private sector because they're already registered for independent practice as we move forward. Coming to the issue of the vaccination program. The vaccination program, I think, we present every 2 weeks. The target of 40 million. Of course, there are exogenous factors now as we are having with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which has been delayed because of some global auditing that Johnson & Johnson is doing. We're expecting to get the first delivery on the week, I think almost a week ago. We didn't get that. The vaccines were packed and ready for delivery in Tebeja, but they could not move until the Johnson & Johnson globally gives the quiet. So those issues, they affect, but we still keep our target. And we've presented in the portfolio committee that we want to have done with the 40 million by February 2021. And we have said in the first phase, this is a target for healthcare workers. Second phase, in terms of essential workers, people in congregate setting and the elderly, 16.6 million. Then the 22.5 million, making it 40 million. In terms of the stock of the vaccines that we've signed for, signed and sealed agreements. We've signed for 31 million doses with Johnson & Johnson, which is equal to 31 million lives vaccinated, of course, taking into consideration that there might be some wastages because it's a one-dose vaccine. we have already My apologies, I wanted to say 2022. Thanks for correction, Honourable Member. And then for the Pfizer, we've got a signed and sealed contract for 20 million, which is 10 million lives. So that is 31 million plus 10 million, that is 41 million already. Now, here I mean the signed and sealed contract. With the COVAX facility, we've signed for 12 million doses, which is about 6 million lives on a double dose vaccine. And we've already paid a deposit of $19.2 million with the COVAX facility. So that's in addition to the Pfizer and the J&J, and there's still some negotiations going on. So I just wanted to make that clear, but Dr. Anbanle will come in at a later stage and clarify those issues. And then there's an issue on the appeals board for the Nursing Council. I must say the matter is receiving attention, and it's going to be finalized very soon. It has already passed my office, so that will be sorted out as soon as it has gone through the executing authority. And then the issue of the possible threat of the third wave, yes, that is a problem. We've seen, as the Deputy Minister rightly mentioned in the opening remarks, we are keeping very heightened surveillance. We are seeing the numbers for the past 2-3 days. We've been hitting more than 2,000 per day. And we've got a few provinces that are worrying us, one being now Gauteng coming up quite strongly, of the Free State, the Northern Cape, and the Northwest. But we're watching all the provinces on a daily basis. And we are actually activating a number of response areas as it comes to the management of COVID-19. And also, there's been isolated cases that have been reported in our ports of entry, and mainly at the marine ports of entry, where we've had some vessels that have come in with positive people, and we've activated our quarantining, tracing, and case management for those people. And we are also ensuring that we are strengthening surveillance at the ports of entry. We do have actually an advisory from the Minister Advisory Committee on how we need to be managing our ports of entry to try and manage the importation of the cases, which in some instance might bring in the variants of concern which have been seen in other countries which we don't have in South Africa. And I must say that specifically with the Indian variant, our team at CRISP, that is doing genomic sequencing, have recently briefed the Minister and the Deputy Minister on the work they are doing. We've not picked that variant as yet in South Africa, but we are actually having a heightened surveillance in terms of ensuring that we do this genomic sequencing to be able to pick up if that variant is already in the country. However, we must also just advise the Portfolio Committee that the same team has advise the Minister and the Deputy Minister that this variant that is in India, in terms of its virulence, it's not as strong as the variant that was driving our second wave here, which is the 541YV2, in terms of being aggressive. So I will for now stop there and then hand over to my colleagues in a row just to deal with specific questions, starting with Thuli, then the CFO, then Dr. Pillay, Dr. Makanya. Thank you very much.
Thank you, BG, and thank you, Chairperson. Just I'll respond to a few issues as the others will be taken over by the DDGs, as BG has indicated. So the first one is to do with the health patient registration system. And do say that the engagement that have happened in terms of the integration of the databases have mainly occurred with the public sector databases, including the Department of Home Affairs, because they've got the main registry, the dumps that were brought by the Department of Education for children. But the next phase, which is planned for this financial year, is then going to assist us come up with the SOPs and the protocols around the private sector. But I must say that the lessons that are coming out of the current electronic database for vaccines is that one of how we go around the dams as opposed to people individually registering themselves. So that is on the pipeline. The second issue that I wanted to talk to is the one to do with whether we're going to recover in terms of our service delivery levels. It is challenging because of the budget issues. However, the issue of lockdowns and reduced service delivery has been happening across the globe. And so as we develop these catch-up plans that the DM has referred to, we actually are working with several partners, including the WHO and the UN agencies, around how we deal with such as a country. And then the third issue that was raised was around the number of targets that has been reduced. So just to say to the Honorable Geller that we actually, I mean, that, the CFO did allude to the fact that some of the cuts that have happened to the program were channeling the funds to COVID-19. So it is partly in that light that we looked at some of the indicators and we had to actually we had to scrutinize them more. However, with that said, I wanted to say that, I mean, we have looked at the priority essential services issues as highlighted earlier on, be it on NHI or essential services in terms of the communicable and non-communicable diseases and ensure that those are prioritized. Thank you, DG. I will stop at this and hand over to CFO.
Thank you, DG and Chair. Let me address the issue of the reduction of the NTG, the tertiary service grant and HIV. Just to say that the reduction of these grants, it's not the first year it's been reduced. It's actually been the last two financial years, although the extent this year is much more. And the one way of looking at these grants is we added a number of components within these grants to mitigate the issue of non-flexibility amongst components. And we've seen some success in the fact in the case that if a province underspends on one component, to reprioritize it to another component becomes much easier. So that's part of our rationalization program. As a finance unit, rationalization for us means looking at your package of services and what is being offered. It might be looking at the number of districts and hospitals giving certain services. So that's the kind of rationalization that we would like to see, just from a finance point of view. I'm not sure if I should touch on anything that the Honourable Chairwa raised, or I won't. There was quite a number of issues raised on the reduction of the budget. So on the 3.4% reduction in budget, the Treasury guideline was actually much more. It was about 5%. And this is an unconditional grants. What makes it difficult for us at national level is that some of these grants are there to assist with statutory provisions in terms of the placements of interns. And as soon as that budget gets reduced, it makes it difficult for us to even maintain the rollovers or the carry-through costs of some of these salaries and wages that they have to pay for that. The infrastructure budgets, the maintenance issues are definitely going to be affected to some extent. We have made available or we've made provision within the grant framework of infrastructure to have a much bigger emphasis on the maintenance in the provinces. So, new projects are really being evaluated to see if it's necessary or not. At national level, we would probably move towards looking at financing more your major projects and start reducing our intervention on maintenance matters at provincial level, given the fact that provinces now can use most of their grant on infrastructure
for maintenance. The issue of what is our shortage, it's a very difficult one because when we do that, it will depend on the number of assumptions that you take into account. If I've got to do my best guess, I would say that our shortage is at least what we lost in baseline plus about 5%, and that's conservative. And for national health, that would probably be around 3.2 billion, and that would exclude the COVID-related expenditure. And we've had a previous analysis of budget shortages at provincial level at the time, and I think it was presented to this committee as well. We were looking at 9 to 10 billion, but in this case, it will also exclude the COVID allocation. So it's a very difficult kind of guess to make, but it will depend on our assumptions when we do this analysis. The issue of the AG findings, yes, we've seen those AG findings. We've engaged quite a bit at a CFO forum on them. They relate to finance as well as performance issues. So we've asked provinces to put together audit action plans on how to address them, and we'll definitely discuss them hopefully prior to the engagement with yourselves and the AG going forward. I did mention the issue of the reduction in HIV and how we're trying to mitigate that. But obviously, with a big reduction of that, your space to maneuver in terms of mitigation gets very limited. Jay, if I may, just address one issue. The FFC reports, this is now the first time I was actually part of the meeting on, I think, Tuesday. And my issue always with the FFC report has been some of the accuracy in the reporting. Now, they said that they have a reporting function to yourselves, but you know, for the same measure, so does the AG. And after that meeting, I did have a discussion with the presenter from FFC, and I think we need to agree that reports of this nature could probably be discussed with the department as well, and we would easily be able to solve some of the misconceptions or even inaccuracies. What they report to you is their business, but I felt that, you know, to put energy in trying to correct some of the findings is counterproductive. With the AG, we do have a very good relationship. We do have meetings regularly with them, and they do give us some indication of what reporting will be done. And I think if we can just streamline that relationship with FFC going forward, it will be to all our advantages. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Thank you, Chair. Good day to honourable members, Deputy Minister and colleagues. I'll deal with some of the questions. I think DG has dealt with a few of them as well. So I think on the question relating to the forensic chemistry labs, I think just to say that we have been working to clear the backlog, trying to support staff in doing that. We've also now asked the NHLS to support us on the operation side of this happening. And I think that given that the NHLS has a better capacity when it comes to laboratory management, we think that they'll be able to improve the throughput of the labs because the forensic chemistry labs, as you know, are sitting with us, and it's actually the core business more for an organization that does laboratory testing. So we're hoping that some of the efficiencies that the NHLS will bring will help to reduce our backlogs. Chair, on the question about the variants, I think the important point, I think DG has addressed it, but just to in addition to say that anybody that enters the country is required to do a PCR test, and it needs to be negative before they enter. And it's important to also bear in mind that variants don't only come from the outside, they also develop in country. And the way variants develop is as the virus continues to replicate, and if we have uncontrolled infection and spread amongst people, as the virus replicates many times, it starts developing variants. It's a natural course of its replication. And so the key thing is to make sure that we reduce the spread of infection, people to use masks and abide by the NPIs, once I think everybody is vaccinated, that reduction would reduce, and therefore the consequence of variants would reduce. But it's important to bear in mind that variants don't only come from the outside, but they can develop internally as well, based on the extent of spread of infection. On the community service placement, Chair, I think the DG has dealt with the issue around posts and the placements, that these happened twice a year. The intern placements are twice a year, at the end of the year as well as in mid-year. And anybody that had not passed exams for the end of year or January placement then becomes eligible for the second cycle. So it's not that they've been forgotten, it's just that the cycles are regulated, and that's the way we've been managing it for years now. On the community service placement and married couples, I think important to say it is our policy that married couples should be placed together. In order for us to do that, we need to require the married couples at the point of application to indicate that they are married and that they would like to be placed together. The system then would try to prioritize them in the areas that they want. Obviously, if they choose areas where there is difficulty to place two people, that becomes a challenge. But secondly, after placement of married couples are done, then the general applications are then addressed so everybody else is placed. So if you come after all of that and then want to be placed in a particular place, it becomes difficult because those places have been taken up by the other medical students or community service placements. So those are some of the difficulties that we've experienced with trying to satisfy everybody relating to their placements. On the question about the high vacancy rate and the bloated administration and staff for the front line, we've recognized this a couple of years ago, and the National Department did do some work and make recommendations to the DPSA around this, as well as our provincial departments, around the structure of the head office staff, or what we would consider to be a generic structure. We had lots of discussion about it, but this will be something that the DPSA obviously has to implement, because we don't have direct control over the posts that provincial departments create at head office or at the front line. But we would certainly support the principle that front line must be the area where most staff should be placed and should be prioritized over administrative positions. On the readiness of the system for vaccines, let me say that we have what we call the master facility list, with guidelines about what each site should have, and at each site there is a manager, if I can call them that, of the site who confirms that all of the different elements that are required for vaccination to take place is there, and they then sign off on that, and that's the basis on which the EVDS then functions. We've had across the country over 3,000 facilities that have been registered onto the EVDS, and this is in the public and the private system, and I think that will continue to happen as more facilities need to be created in areas where demand is required. I think from a registration, the vaccine registration perspective, I think it's important to say that there are a number of people that have not necessarily received the message around how to register or an understanding of it. And so there's campaigns across each of the provinces. They've given us fairly detailed plans of their communication campaign of how they plan to reach these communities and get them to register. The community health workers have also been armed to go out and register people, go to the SASSA queues as an example, where they wait for their monies and make sure we register them there, so that that could be an easy point in order to reach many people. In terms of our budget for vaccines, I think it's important to say that the Treasury budgeting process starts a long time before the budget is actually announced. So I think while the budget currently reflects over 4 billion, it's important to recognize that the National Treasury has given us a commitment that they will fund all the vaccines that are required when they're required. And so we have a meeting with the Treasury every week to indicate how much is required. So I think the the four billion that has been indicated is the indicative number, but where adjustments are required and where support is required from Treasury, they will do so, and any adjustments required in the adjustment budget will happen as well. As the DG had indicated, financially, the 31 million as well as the 20 million is secured in terms of the vaccines, which will certainly cover the entire adult population that we anticipate will need to be vaccinated. I think that those were all the points I needed to deal with, DG. Thank you.
Okay. Well, was that the last one, DG?
Yes, thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to my colleagues. I wanted Dr. Makhanya to comment on HIV and TB catch-up plans.
Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister and Director General, thank you for the opportunity to make a few inputs related to the program, HIV and TB program in particular. I think those would be the two, and also the question that was raised in terms of the status of the donor funding, which normally augments the departmental allocation. Chairperson, I would really like to highlight that as early as in May, around May last year, there was a clear indication of the impact of the pandemic on the clinical services, particularly HIV, TB, and MCWH, and immediately we developed our catch-up plans, and catch-up plans were actually directed at addressing the gaps that has been created because of the epidemic, and mainly focusing on ensuring that we accelerate case finding through prevention intervention, linkages to care, and also on notification in the case of TB. If one can just give a highlight of the catch-up plans that were developed, then subsequently when we realized that COVID pandemic is actually introducing a new normal, and we need to be able to ensure the sustainability of essential service in the context of the epidemic, the catch-up plans were then further refined and developed into service sustainability programs that are now being implemented and monitored on quarter-to-quarter basis at provincial level. Our plans really focus on prevention, and if we look at HIV, the goal of prevention is to accelerate case finding, and we are doing that through innovation, introducing the innovating testing methodologies such as HIV self-screening in collaboration, that the initiative that you are dealing in collaboration with our partners. We are accelerating HIV case finding through index testing, HIV self-screening, targeted testing at key entry point of all service delivery platform, and we are also ensuring consistent linkage to care. We have also distributed self-testing kits. These were distributed online and within independent community pharmacists in collaboration with the Independent Community Pharmacists Association, as these remained open as essential services. The HIV self-test were also distributed to communities during COVID-19, to communities who have symptoms. We've also increased our screening and contact tracing, particularly using our core of community health workers that are already within communities, who are now offering integrated screening services. While they screen for COVID, they do the same for TB, and the same for screening for HIV. With specific to linkage to treatment, the key intervention in terms of service continuity was that clients have been enrolled to clients have been assisted to enrolled on chronic on central chronic medicine dispensing and distribution program, and this is used as a mechanism of decanting patients to differentiated modes of care so that they can collect treatment nearer places of their work or nearer their home without having to crowd or to go to health facilities. And patients are also encouraged to be initiated on treatment on the same day as they are diagnosed so that we don't really lose them after being diagnosed and before they are put on treatment. We've also optimized community ART initiation to close the treatment gap for priority populations, particularly men, young people, and children under the age of 15, because our cascade has actually shown such a decline in terms of linkage or to treatment to these target people. We've also scaled up multi-month dispensing of ARVs. Currently, patients are actually getting a maximum treatment of 3 months supply, and we are also trying to, in the process of piloting a package of providing 6 months supply as a measure of making sure that people are retained to people are continuously linked to care to treatment, and on care and support. There is a major campaign that has been initiated in partnership with SANAC and civil society, which is actually framed as Welcome Back campaign, and it is jointly funded by our donor funder, primarily a PEPFAR, and that this is the campaign that we are using to actually try and bring back people who have defaulted by tracking and tracing, and also those who have missed their appointment and those who are due for laboratory tests, so that they are linked back to clinical management, and that's the key intervention in terms of welcome campaign on HIV. The same approach, Chairperson and honorable members, is used for TB management. And again, the same principle of early diagnosis, linkage to treatment, and retention to treatment is used in the context of the catch-up plans and along the 90-90-90 targets that have been set. And specifically on early TB treatment, we are ensuring that TB screening and testing continues during this period. The TB screening tools has been integrated into the COVID-19 screening tools. People with symptoms are then tested for both TB and COVID-19. And this applies to all people presenting to health facilities and for screening of TB COVID contacts at community level. Community health workers are key because they conduct screening at community level, collect specimens on site for referral to the nearest testing laboratories, take specimens to nearest laboratories so that they can be assessed. And as well, we have people who prefer to have self-screening, and those a mobile application for TB screening are provided under TB check, a health check, and it's available, and there's quite an uptake in this because it's used a WhatsApp platform, and people with positive symptoms screens are prompted to go for testing following their self-testing mechanism. There's also mobile chest x-rays that are currently being piloted in 6 districts to provide screening services. And this is intended to identify people who have TB disease but do not experience any symptoms so that they can be identified for testing. And routine TB testing using the GeneXpect machine, irrespective of symptom, is also conducted for people who are living with HIV at least once a year. And when it comes to linkage to care on TB, the interventions include that people who test positive for TB are contacted and requested to come to health facilities for initiation of treatment, and this they are contacted through telephonic contact by community health workers. And there is a system for sending results to patients directly by the NHLS with a message to go to the nearest health facilities for further treatment. Other mHealth solutions are also being piloted to ensure linkage to care of patients, particularly the patients who have MDR-TB. With retention to care, again, the use of decentralized medication outlets within their communities, like in HIV, it's also done for the TB, and to avoid multiple visits, again, we also have the multi-month dispensing of TB medication as we do for the ARVs. I think that is what I would highlight, Chairperson, in terms of service continuity plans, that we do have plans of case finding, linking people to treatment, and also be able to retain them to treatment. And most of these activities, interventions, are co-supported by donor funding and PEPFAR in particular. And for 2021 operational plan, for 2021 operational plan, the funding planning is quite at an advanced stage, but we have noted that even with our donor funding, there has been a cut in allocation. For instance, the allocation for 2020 operational plan from PEPFAR was 523 million, and the broad allocation for 2021 is reduced to 450 million. So the budget cut is also happening at the level of the donor funding as well. And the plans in terms of allocation of donor funding are quite at an advanced stage, including that funding that comes from the Global Fund. Thank you, Honorable Chair and DG.
DG, that was the last input, isn't it?
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. We'll hand over to our Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Yeah, the Deputy Minister will do the closing remarks. The Deputy Minister, I will just say something and then you can come in to close our meeting. We still have another meeting that's starting at 1, and I would want my honourable members at least to find some time to have a cup of coffee or stretch their legs before that meeting. It is true that during the portfolio committee meeting with the Financial and Fiscal Commission, Honourable Wilson asked them if they shared their
with the Department of, you're breaking up, Chair. We can't hear you.
So they find space and time to share their. You can't hear me from where the time I mentioned your name or after that. Yeah, I'm saying when the Financial and Fiscal Commission made a presentation to us, Honorable Wilson did ask if they have shared their report with the Department of Health, and they said they have not. So I'm saying we are not able to be prescriptive to the Chapter 9 institutions, but I think it is fair what Ian van der Merwe has raised, that for a constructive engagement like they do have with the AG, so this report too must be discussed by the Fiscal Financial Commission together with the Department of Health. I think there's something that also I just need to share. for members to check that the department might try its best to place married couples close to each other in the same vicinity. But I've been aware when I was associated with the department in the last 10 years that around November there's a flood of marriages. People who have not been married for some time, but suddenly when they come,
we've lost you again,
Jim. And in the same month, they want to be placed in the same space. Now, that becomes an administrative.
Maybe the chair should close the video.
Hello?
Maybe if you close the video, you'll be more stable.
Oh, okay. So I finished the point of fiscal and financial, and I said the department might be assisted, but there is an administrative nightmare that comes with some of the students at the end of the year when they are completing their degrees. There's a flood of marriages and wanting to be placed in the same space, and that has not been known to the department. Suddenly, in November or December, you are told, no, I must go to the same site with my spouse. We have just been married 2 weeks ago. So those are some of the considerations that we also need to be aware of, that it becomes an administrative nightmare to make sure that every other person is placed within the same space. They will try their best, but there are constraints that are sometimes kind of limitations. With all that, Department of Health, we have not been able to be very able to tell us how you would really manage with this budget. Hence, we have indicated that while we're supporting the budget, but we think that we are going to be under severe strain. Hence, we will find space to meet with the Minister of Finance. We would want that Minister of Health accompanies him when he meets with us. We would therefore want to say, Deputy Minister, thanks for your efforts to bring the team and the explanations that you have given. We will continue to seek support. Part of meeting with the Minister of Finance is to maybe to support you and your programs, because your failures are severe failures of the country. I mean, you can't get people to go to work if they are sick and unhealthy. So you also come in very strong. You can't have mothers delivering healthy babies if they are not being taken care of. So health is so critical, and we feel those are some of the things that we need to prepare. Cutting a health budget is really something extremely concerning, and we'll support you in that. Would you have any closing remarks, Deputy Minister, so that we could then, in the next 10 minutes, get members to start another meeting?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks to the honourable members for their questions and also their comments. Just one specific matter to respond to Honorable Ismail on the students, especially the medical students in Cuba. Indeed, the Cuba as a country is facing a number of challenges. It's not immune to the global economic situation, but also, as we all know, complicated also by the continuing blockade by the United States of America. And also the attack and weakening of economies of some of the countries which have also been in cooperation with Cuba. So there have been challenges, and we have been in communication with our students there. Our team in the department has been in regular contact. There was an arrangement together with the Department of Finance, I mean sort of defense, which also have students and also some activities in relation to Cuba, where they were going to have an aircraft going there, and there was an arrangement to send some supplies to supplement some of the shortages. I just learned, I think yesterday, that arrangement doesn't seem to be proceeding. So I'm sure the team, under the leadership of the DG, will work on other alternative ways through which some of the basic consumables with the students that were raising shortages over. Now that it looks like the defense aircraft, it's no more going there, there will have to be some other arrangements. So it's a matter which you assist with. Chair and honourable members, just in closing, just a few comments from my side to say that indeed we do understand the concern of members about whether we will be able to implement the 40 million population vaccination as we have pronounced in terms of the population immunity. But as the DG and Dr. Anban Pile have indicated, this is quite advanced. The president instructed that health and treasury must work together. So that's why it is possible with this partnership that even where funds may have been allocated up to a certain period going into the next financial year, because of the close working relationship, it is possible to make adjustments. And that's why the contracts, as DG has indicated, are signed to provide for much more than 41 million, actually, when you add the COVAX facility. So it's because of the close working relationship between health and treasury that we are not constrained into just working according to the financial flow as pronounced, because once the funds are committed, then with the approval of treasury, you could be able to actually make orders even ahead of time. So that's why these orders have been confirmed. The platform for vaccination is ready, as indicated by Dr. Pillay. We do have to catch up on the registration, as indicated that the over and above self-registration, all provinces are now being encouraged to roll out outreach programs so that the over 60s can be registered. And once we go into the industrial component as well, where people are actually in industrial settings, teachers, police officers, army, and so on, once we move into that area, the uptake will also be quickened and we'll be able to roll out as planned. We appreciate the concern of members about the reduction in budget. Indeed, it's going to impact on everything, on our ability to hire staff even frontline. But as mentioned by some of the members and also from our team, we will be working with our colleagues in provinces to prioritize frontline health staff and reduce more on the admin side. Of course, it will have impact on infrastructure, on equipment, on consumables, information systems, EMS, and many other services. So we count also on the support of the honorable members as we try to lobby our treasury and including at a presidential level to make sure that even as we go through this difficult economic situation, health services must be spared. So we thank you, honorable chairperson and honorable members, for that support. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister and your team. You are now released. Honorable members, find some time in the next 12 minutes to do something little for yourself. We'll come back at 1 o'clock to listen to the presentation of the Office of the Health Standard Compliance and the Ombudsperson. Thank you very much.